Good afternoon. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus pregame edition. It is noon. The Blue Jays play at 1 o'clock, 108, first pitch. It's the home opener for the New York Yankees. So we get a whole bunch of home openers here. The Jays obviously opened the season in Tampa Bay for their home opener, the Yankees home opener. The Blue Jays home opener is on Monday. A bunch of my colleagues got to go see the new Rogers Center yesterday. I was on air doing the Raptors show, as I was just now. So I'll have to wait until Monday to check it out. Someone else will be checking it out. He'll be calling the game today on the radio side, but I'm sure is eager to get into the new Rogers Center and see what that's all about, feel what that's all about. It's the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Schulman. Ben, good. I almost said good morning. Good afternoon. How you doing, man?
Well, it's kind of morning, yeah. Right? It's still morning. I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me on. I did get to check out Rogers Center yesterday. It looked cool. The food, if you're a fan of maple bacon hot dogs, you're going to be pretty happy. So that's exciting. And yeah, can't wait for the home opener. And this should be a fun series coming up here against the Yankees too.
Absolutely. It'd be great if the Blue Jays would get a hit or two in this series. Okay, I was going to start with like some jokey Raptors 905 stuff too, because you
Javon
are also
Freeman Liberty.
Yeah, I mean, Malik Williams, what's his deal? Obviously not a 905 guy, but up in the G League. But let's get right to where we're at with the Jays. They're 3-4 to start the season, which, given who they started the season against, maybe not the end of the world, but you would really love, after this 10-game road trip to start the season, to come back to Toronto for the home opener 5-5. Pressure's now on for that a little bit. You're 3-4. You're in New York for three. The Yankees are 6-1 to start the season. But even beyond the wins and losses, like, this team has had a rough go to start hitting. It is the worst batting average the team's ever had through the first seven games.
Yep.
They're the first team in baseball history to get no hit and then one hit in the first 7 days.
Baseball's been around a while.
This season, baseball's been around for 500 years. How was calling that series? Like, obviously still cool and still fun and a no-hitter. Was that your first no-hitter?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
But to stack a one-hitter on top of it, like how tough was that?
Well, I have to say, like, it's a very fun job. Not that it's not a tough job in the fact that there's still a lot of work put into it, but I would not sit here and tell you a sob story. It's still been really fun. I'd rather this happen now than in the middle of July. I think in the middle of July, when you get no hit and one hit, you're a little bit more in the slog of it. So it didn't bother me too much. You know, if 176 carries into June, that could be a problem. But it's still been a lot of fun overall. It will be interesting to see, though, if the hits start coming. Because as much as getting home early from work is nice sometimes, it's not something that you want to make a trend out of.
Yeah, you'd like to be here pretty late. And a programming note, by the way. So we're here 12-1. The game's at 1 o'clock. You and Chris LaRue will be on the call with Sho Ali in Blue Jay Central. Blair and Barker will be with you post-game. That'll be on both TV and radio. And then eventually it'll be fan pregame. That's scheduled for 5, but if the game goes long, you know, we're going to give Blair and Barker their time on either side. Blue Jay Central at 12:30 on the TV side, but don't turn it over to that station. Stick here with us. Dan, Buck, and Hazel, Jamie and Joe doing Blue Jay Central, and then Blair and Barker will have their post-game on TV as well. So it is you, Chris LaRue, on the call. When you look ahead to this Yankee series, or even just with what's plagued the Blue Jays, the obvious answer is like, well, it's 7 games, it's a 3-game series, it's random, they're not going to be this bad. We know they're not going to be that bad. But in terms of what has plagued this team at the dish early on here, acknowledging they had two big outburst games within this, it's been very hot or cold only. What are you seeing? What have you guys picked up on the broadcast? I know Chris obviously brings the ex-player perspective. Maybe he's seen some stuff in terms of how pitchers are attacking this lineup.
Yeah, I think that in the first series against Tampa Bay, they really capitalized on fastballs. And that was what led to some big offensive outbursts for them. I think Houston saw that, and guys like Ronel Blanco, who also was working on his changeup anyway, and Christian Javier, who was also working on his changeup anyway coming into the season, decided to not give the Blue Jays a lot of fastballs. They went for breaking balls and off-speed pitches at a way higher clip than usual. The Blue Jays have really struggled against those pitches so far. I don't think that it's necessarily been approach in terms of what are they swinging at and what aren't they swinging at. They seem to be doing a pretty good job of not swinging at pitches outside of the zone and swinging at pitches in the zone, but they're not doing very much damage on those pitches either, I think is a big thing. They've swung at some more pitches on the edges early in counts than probably they should have. They were trying to, it sounded like in spring, you know, if a guy's going to make a great pitch on the outside corner, let him. And I think they got away from that a little bit in Houston. But at the end of the day, there have been some good pitches that they've put the bat on ball, and the ball just hasn't flown off very hard. They need to do more damage. It's a hard problem to solve because it's so simple in a way. hit the ball harder. They have to hit the ball harder and more in the air than they have before.
And look, that's obviously going to help you. You know, pulling the ball in the air, hitting the ball hard in the air is going to help you with the home run side of things. But even if you wanted to manufacture runs, the more traditional, like they're one of only a small handful of teams that have only attempted one stolen base so far this year. Yes. Like stolen base rates are up around baseball all last year and early this year. And the Jays can't get in on that because they're not getting anyone on base, which is, you know, obviously a prerequisite to doing small ball. Yeah. Can't small ball with the bases
can't
empty.
Steal first.
So. Yeah. There is, Billy Hamilton would still be in the league.
Yes.
If you could.
If you're a Savannah Banana, you can steal first. I believe. But outside of that, no.
would be a cool wrinkle. So you mentioned that the Astros went away from giving the Blue Jays fastballs.
Yes.
That is something that league-wide early on, we're actually seeing a trend league-wide. The fastball rate is down. Maybe that's just early noise. Guys are working on stuff. Guys don't want to, you know, let the dog bark all the way early on. But fastball usage is down, and that's been a multi-year trend. Marcus Stroman stands in contrast to that, where in his first outing this year, he threw about 75% fastballs between his sinker and his cutter. Marcus Stroman, absolutely a guy with that sinker that will invite you to make contact. Just bet that you're putting that contact on the ground. There are some Blue Jays who've done well against that historically, some who haven't. Given what we've seen this first week, how do you think Marcus Stroman fits into, you know, because again, a little counter to what the Astros did, Stroman's probably going to pepper a lot of fastballs, a lot of sinkers and cutters around the zone of this Blue Jays team, but he's kind of making this bet that, yeah, you're not going to be able to get it in the air. You're not going to do much with it.
Yeah, I think it, again, kind of comes down to the same thing. Stroman's got great location. He's going to hit the edges of the zone a ton. You can't really give into those pitches. If he gets ahead of you on one on a good pitch, he gets ahead of you on one on a good pitch because that's a ground ball pitch. You have to wait for him to leave something over the heart of the plate. He is not a very hard thrower in today's Major League Baseball. I think there is a bit of debate in, like, very nerdy back rooms at this point whether a cutter is a fastball, but if we consider it a fastball, then they're going to see a million fastballs in this game, and he threw a ton of cutters in his first start. So I think that, you know, there's some good low ball hitters on the Blue Jays. You look at Justin Turner, Davis Schneider back in the lineup today. Those guys could do really well against Stroman's approach, which is typically down. He's going to stay down in the zone a lot of the time, but they're going to have to really, really not give in to Marcus Stroman, because what he wants you to do is swing at a first pitch fastball that's on the outside corner, roll over. All of a sudden he's in the sixth inning, he's thrown 65 pitches, and you're flashing back to 2019, the first half with the Blue Jays again, or the 2015 playoff run, and you're seeing exactly what's made him really, really good.
And he's only faced the Blue Jays once in his career. I'm sure it's something he's up for, given we know the personality of Marcus Stroman. It's exactly what he did. He was here with the Cubs in the summer of 2022. I think he went five innings of one run ball, only got one strikeout, but you couldn't do anything with it. You're just going to chip away, and he's going to work fast. And yeah,
he's just kind of old fashioned, you know, like that's something that's used a lot with guys who generate ground balls, but he really is. He's not looking to strike you out. He's looking to pitch deep into the game, looking for you to get yourself out. So it really is kind of a battle between the ears, I think, as much as it is a battle, a physical battle at the plate.
And a patience thing, right? Like, and not just patience in terms of like working walks, but can you see a fastball that you think you can hit? Because it's, you know, he only throws 91. It's not like he's blowing these by you. You see that and it's around the zone. You probably think you can do it, but you have to lay off and be disciplined for something a little more in, you know, in a damage zone for you. You mentioned David Schneider's back in the lineup today. Yep. He's going to play at second base. IKF's at third, so Kevin Biggio draws out today. David Schneider's also hitting fifth. Now, he's a hitter who, like you mentioned, has some success with this type of pitch. We know that an area he struggles and why maybe he didn't start against Christian Javier was the velocity up in the zone is where those kind of high spin rate rising fastballs are where he's tended to struggle. He has the best numbers on the Blue Jays dating back to last year against right-handed sinkers and cutters, so that's encouraging. Where have you been on the David Schneider kind of usage and deployment, and think this is a good spot for him? You know, Yankee Stadium can be a little friendly at times too for a guy with his swing profile.
Yeah, first of all, today I think it's absolutely the right call to put him in the lineup. I think this is a great matchup for him. I think they need him in the offense right now to get something going. In terms of, you know, there was a lot made out of him not being in the lineup against Javier. I don't think that it was a bad decision to take him out against Javier. I mean, at the end of the day, let's say he hits a home run every game he plays this year, which he's not going to do. He's hit two-run home runs this season. He's not the whole offense. Putting him in there is not solving all their problems anyway. That doesn't mean they should play him a lot. I'm getting more open to the idea that you bring Schneider in more than just against lefties and favorable matchups. Maybe if it's just kind of a wash in matchup, then you bring him in. But against a guy like Javier, who is so specifically a weakness for him, I still think that he should stay out. But hey, should Davis Schneider start four games a week? I wouldn't be opposed to that. I think we'll have to wait and see. But clearly, he does do something for this offense. And when you put him in the right spot specifically, I mean, hitting Josh Hader's slider out of the yard, even if it is hung, is still a really impressive thing. That's one of the better sliders in all of baseball. Hader went to it against the scouting report because it's his best pitch, and Schneider still got it. So I think that he is a guy that should feature a lot. It's just questionable whether he should be literally an everyday player. I'm still not sure I'm there yet.
He's also in control of that a little bit with his defensive progression at second base and left field.
For sure.
If he can get to a spot where they're more comfortable with him defensively in those positions, then the path is, you know, a little clear to wrestle away more than, like you said, the short side of a platoon with Gavin Biggio or however that's going to shake out. I guess left field's kind of a pseudo platoon.
Yeah, some days, maybe one day off a week for each of those guys.
On the other side, Yusei Kikuchi will take the hill today for the Blue Jays. He did not have the best start to the season. Didn't have the best spring either. The stuff looked good, but, you know, the walk rate crept up, and that was such a big part of his 2023. Is that kind of the thing you're looking for most here today? Like, what that kind of nibbling a little too much says about where he's at?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's got to be in the zone, and he just wasn't enough, especially with his fastball in the first game. And he leaned on the fastball a ton, which I found odd considering that he wasn't in the zone all that often. The breaking ball seemed to be kind of his feel pitch to get back in there. I would expect to see more curves today. That was such a big pitch for him that he developed last spring and brought into the year and threw a lot and with pretty good success. The slider, obviously, you know, you could argue that's his most dangerous pitch, although 95 from the left side is pretty tough. But I think he's got to be in the zone. If his fastball isn't feeling good, then get a little bit funky, throw a lot of breaking balls, because pretty much the history of Yusei Kikuchi, even dating back before last year, if he's in the zone, like, guys have not really hit him for much of his major league career. It's when he's fallen behind, then he gets hit, or he's walked a couple guys, and then one hit means so much more. But stringing together hits against Yusei Kikuchi is not usually a thing that teams succeed at.
No, last year it was like, okay, hit a solo home run. If I'm going to be in the zone and you're going to catch me on a good pitch, I'll give up a bunch of solo home runs, but they're solo home runs instead of three-run home runs, which... it's a big difference, especially when your team's not scoring runs.
For sure. I mean, Kevin Gausman kind of has a similar thing where he actually gives up a ton of home runs given how good he is. But because he's not giving up any other base runners, really, they don't matter. I think like 2/3 of Gausman's home runs or something, don't quote me on that, last year were solo home runs. And you can give up solo home runs and have good outings all the time, but it's when you start to walk guys, start to give away free passes, that one single, one double can do a lot of damage. Kind of the flip side of the Blue Jays keep walking and not doing the damage that they need to, but a lot of other teams have capitalized on them so far. So it's very simple. It's a little bit reductive, but if he throws strikes, he's generally very good. And the good news is, even in down years like 2022, he's been really good against the Yankees. He was good against them that season in a year where he struggled a ton. He's just historically had something going against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. They obviously have good lefties too. More than a good lefty, like a generational left-handed hitter in Juan Soto now. We'll see how that goes. But his numbers against Rizzo are really good. So I think overall, you like Kikuchi going into this start, even if you have questions about what his first start means for a couple other this month.
Yeah, only a 575 OPS against in his career at Yankee Stadium. Yeah. It's those Central Park tosses. He goes to Central Park and plays catch on it on his start days. It's a good bit. You mentioned Juan Soto is in the lineup, so he didn't face a lefty. Kikuchi did not face a lefty at all in his first start. The Yankees will have three lefties in there in Juan Soto, who, yeah, he has platoon splits. He only hits 30% better than league average lefty on lefty.
He's an all-star if his numbers were just his lefty numbers.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it. And Rizzo and Verdugo, the other lefties in there, who are just everyday guys for them. They did pull Austin Wells out, and then Trent Grisham doesn't really play for them much. The one interesting decision in the lineup, and maybe this is they got to find a spot for John Birdie to actually get in there. They traded for him on the eve of the season. He's only started one game because Cabrera's been so hot. And the reason I bring Birdie up, Kikuchi does a better job than most Blue Jays pitchers managing the run game because he is a lefty and he has that quick pickoff move to first base. But the Blue Jays have not done a good job controlling the run game generally. They did not do a good job of it last year. John Birdie is a stolen base specialist. Is that something you would, even with Kikuchi on the mound, you might see the Yankees try to press? They haven't stolen a lot of bases either, but if John Birdie's in the lineup, my eyebrows raise.
I could see it. I mean, both teams, I think the Blue Jays have played so far, have been very aggressive, whether it's normal steals or, you know, Kyle Tucker taking off at an awkward time and taking a bag from the Blue Jays. I think in general, teams are trying to put them under pressure right now. The Blue Jays pitchers seem to be, you know, that seems to be a lot of the discussion around it. It's very minute details here that, you know, Chris LaRue is far more qualified to understand. But it seems like the pitchers sometimes, you know, a guy like Kevin Gausman, it's fairly obvious in the fact that he's a little bit slow to the plate with the tapping. There's a little bit of rhythm. He throws a splitter a ton. You take that because he's Kevin Gausman, and that's not really a problem. But they have a couple guys with different idiosyncrasies that I think play well for base running. So I would expect Birdie, a guy who led Major League Baseball in stolen bases in 2022, to be fairly active on the base paths today. Even the two guys, I believe Toronto's thrown out two guys stealing this year. One of them fell in between first and second base. The other one was an incredible play by Kevin Biggio,
yes,
but it wasn't the greatest throw of all time. So I you know, and Alejandro Kirk, a little bit in his defense, has started all but one game this season. Like, it's not been an easy start to the year for a guy that they were hoping to have fresher than last year. All of a sudden, he's playing every single day, pretty much. Apparently, Brian Servin might get the start tomorrow, but Kikuchi has been really in all the time. So I would expect them to get pretty active. Now, they have a thing where they have so many power hitters. Do you want to run in front of those guys? But when you get down to the Volpes, the Birdies, I mean, you get some opportunities, I think, at that point to start the base runners, especially if they're not hitting well today. If they get out and they're really hitting well, maybe they don't play around as much. But if Kikuchi is dealing like he has so often at Yankee Stadium, I wouldn't be shocked if they ran on him and saw if it could mess with him and mess with the Blue Jays as well in terms of them taking an extra 90 feet.
And certainly once you get to the bullpen portion, and no one in that bullpen, I mean, relievers generally don't control the run game as well, but no one's got the pickoff move Kikuchi has out of that bullpen. When you look at this Yankees lineup, so John Birdie, we're obviously going down the pecking order here a little bit. Anthony Volpe on fire to start the season. Yep. Juan Soto is Juan Soto. And Cabrera not in the lineup today, but he had been red hot as well. This is a team that's off to a 6-1 start, and there are question marks about them, but those mostly fall on the primarily on the pitching side with their health. And then if it's on the hitting side, it's more of a, well, what if guys get injured? Right now they're not. How scary is this team for you if that starting nine can kind of stay together?
I think they're pretty scary. My questions were never about that offense, to be honest. I mean, they had such poor injury luck last year. You lose Aaron Judge. Anthony Rizzo plays for a while, clearly hurt, and then goes out. Stanton was hurt. We still don't really know what Stanton is at this point, but he was hurt for a lot of last year. And then you add, you know, maybe the toughest hitter in all of Major League Baseball. I mean, I even with Shohei Ohtani being around and Mookie Betts, I feel fairly confident of putting Juan Soto in that picture. So they're going to hit. I have almost no doubt they're going to hit as long as Aaron Judge is around and healthy and Juan Soto is too. Those two can drive an offense pretty much on their own. I think they're very scary. My main questions come on the pitching side for them. You know, the starting rotation, like you mentioned, has some question marks. I mean, you know, even guys like Marcus Stroman, who was an all-star last year, with health being a big part of it, had a really rough second half. You had Carlos Rodon have really kind of the worst year of his career probably last year, with health playing a factor as well. You don't really know what guys like Luis Gil are going to do for you in the meantime. So, or who is Nestor Cortes, who also kind of, you know, had a rough year and missed most of last year with health issues too. So I think if stuff's going to happen to them, it's going to be because of the pitching, not because of the hitting. I have absolute confidence in the New York Yankees to live up to, you know, whatever Bronx Bomber or whatever adage you want to give them, because they can hit. They, you know, when you have Juan Soto and Aaron Judge in the same lineup in their primes, fully healthy, there's really no reason you shouldn't score a ton of runs.
It's terrifying. So you better get to guys like Luis Gil. If they're who the Jays will see Sunday, they'll see Clark Schmidt tomorrow, who just had I know their ERA results weren't quite there, but like the stuff metrics on his spring stuff was just like out of this world.
Good.
One of the, you know, kind of metrically one of the most improved pitchers in baseball this spring. So curious to see how that looks tomorrow as well. But it's Marcus Stroman today. And it's you and Chris LaRue on the call at 1 o'clock on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Thanks for taking your pregame prep time out and joining me, man. Have fun. And I guess I'll see you Monday.
Yeah. I'll see you Monday. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Paul Sporer of FanGraphs. He's one of the best pitching analysts out there. We'll go a little deeper on Marcus Stroman, Yusei Kikuchi, and the rest of the matchups we'll get throughout this series. We'll also go over the lineups with you. We've got those. We'll take a little bit of a look at how Stroman's fared against these particular Blue Jays in the past, how Kikuchi has succeeded at Yankee Stadium and against most, but not all, of the Yankees. He's also never faced Juan Soto, so that's kind of a big question mark today. Jays Talk Plus pregame edition continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360 after this break.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to Jays Talk Plus pregame edition. I'm Blake Murphy with you 12-1 today because the Blue Jays have a Friday afternoon game. It's the home opener down at Yankee Stadium. Should be a fun one. It's Marcus Stroman on the hill for the Yankees. Only his second time in his career pitching against the Blue Jays. It'll be Yusei Kikuchi on the hill for the Jays. He has tremendous career numbers at Yankee Stadium, even in his lesser years. Gotta credit it to, as the Jays social media team always points out when they're in New York, getting those games to catch in at Central Park, which looks like a blast. Also a blast getting to catch up with my old pal, Paul Sporer. He joins us now. He's the managing fantasy baseball editor at Fangraphs, co-host of The Sleeper and The Bus. He helps with Out of the Park Baseball, the game, which is like, it's always on my lap during baseball season while I have games on. Man, great to see you. Thanks for joining me, Paul.
Blake, thanks so much for having me on, man. It's great to catch up.
Always great to see your mustache as well. I saw the dog peeking out a little bit earlier.
We got both of them here, too.
Yeah.
One there.
For people who don't know, they can follow you on Twitter at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R, as well as on Twitch, where you do a lot of streaming. Just kind of going through the box scores, but also doing Out of the Park stuff. I want to start with the Out of the Park note, because I play that game a ton. It's a very cool game if you're a baseball nerd who wants to be in the GM chair or the manager chair. And you help on the Perfect Team content side. How did you get connected with them, and what is that role for you, being kind of, you're a baseball analyst, but you're also helping design the game all the nerds like me are playing?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun because I've been playing OOTP for so long and happened to be friends with the guy, Rich Grisham, who's over there. And he basically just kind of brought it to me one day and said, hey, would you want to help design the content for it? I was like, really? He's like, create the cards for Perfect Team, kind of lay out the game plan for it. And Perfect Team's card collecting mode, where you kind of build your team with cards over the years of baseball, so you can put in, a 1923 Babe Ruth with a present day, Dalton Varsho, if you want, if the card's good enough, right? You can really run the gamut with it. You get some old school Jays, get some of those World Series winning Jays. You can do a lot of different things with it. It's a lot of fun. It's been an amazing opportunity. I play a lot of the base game on OOTP too, where you create a franchise. You can go historical with that or take it present day. Just so much you can do with the game. It is a baseball nerd's dream. And both of you and I have used that phrase. We don't say the phrase nerd, negatively, by the way.
No, absolutely not. It's a kind of badge of honor. And look, we're in the era of there's no content that isn't, there's no niche that doesn't have its market. And, everyone, you're a wrestling nerd, you're a baseball nerd, you're a music nerd, whatever. Exactly. There's something for all of those pockets. So in your other day job, you at Fangraphs, you are the fantasy baseball head there, and you are the guy I trust most with my own fantasy teams for starting pitchers. Starting pitcher rankings ahead of the season. You do a daily drop of, hey, here are my starting pitching rankings for the day, whether for fantasy or DFS. Obviously late in the year when everyone's streaming starters, that becomes incredibly valuable. What is your process like when you sit down? I guess I want to do start of season first, because we're still close enough to the start of the year that those rankings are really relevant. But when you sit down and you're going through your starting pitcher rankings for the year, what does that process look like for you?
So, basically just start going through each team and kind of listing out who are their potential starters, their top 6-7 candidates, and kind of breaking them up into groups, just the way we do, the way they're identified by real teams, your number ones, your twos, your threes, your fours, your fives, and kind of going from there. And then I sort it all with that first, cut through, and then where are all the ones at? Are these guys all actually ones, right? Every team has a one, not every team has an ace. There's a distinction between those two things. And so then I kind of start the process from there and whittle it down. And then all of a sudden I just decide, how deep do I want to go this year? Do I want to have a 300 person list? Do I want to cut it down to about $150? I think I landed on 170 this year as far as ranking guys, because we know over the course of the year, a lot of guys are going to come up and do different things. But how good of a rank can I give the 160th pitcher for the entire season? So really the key focus is those top 80 to 100 that you can really kind of hone in on and figure out what they're going to be for the year. And then the rest of the guys we start to look at as the year goes on. One of the things over the last couple of years that I've really tried to stress to people is don't think too much full season. I know you play full season leagues, but think of things in 3 to 6 week pockets, depending on what your league size is and what sort of availability you can do to make changes, because things change so much. So if you're picking up a guy in April and you're like, well, what's he going to be for me in August? Who cares? He might not even be on your roster at that point. Obviously, you draft someone like Kevin Gausman in the first, second, third round, you're expecting 6 good months out of him. The aces are a bit different. But even somebody like Kikuchi, quality starter, did really, really well last year, limiting his homers. But I don't even look at him as somebody that I'm worried about for the full year yet. Get me to the start of summer and I'll see where he's at. If the homers return in full force, then I'm not sure if he's on my team in a 10 or 12 team type league. So, you know, I start with the large process and then whittle it down and then really start to narrowly focus on 3 to 6 week pockets.
That makes a lot of sense. And then obviously you're focusing on the day-to-day pockets with the starting pitcher list you put out each day. A minor note to the side here. We'll go through the lineups in full after we're done talking with Paul. But Kevin Kiermaier just got scratched from today's lineup with lower back tightness. So if you are seeing David Schneider now move to left field from second base and Kevin Biggio now in at second base, we were just talking about David Schneider playing at second base in the last segment. That is why Kevin Kiermaier scratched with back tightness. So, Paul, you also do the daily list, and this is obviously a lot more matchup-driven. Today, for example, there are 26 starters going, and it's Marcus Stroman against Yusei Kikuchi. You have Stroman ranked at number 12. You have Kikuchi ranked at number 17. What goes into that? How much are you looking at, you know, pitcher versus hitter history or just general platoon trends, ballpark stuff? What goes into, hey, I like Stroman a little bit better today than I like Yusei Kikuchi?
Yeah, matchup in ballparks and really my full season ranking from the beginning of the year is still playing a lot because we don't really have data to go off of anything worthwhile right now. So I don't care if the Yankees had, you know, 5 terrible starts against lefties so far. That would not influence me to be more in on Kikuchi necessarily. It's too small of a sample to do too much. So I'm still going off of mostly what I thought coming into the year. And Stroman's a guy that generally when he's on the field, you trust him. You start him in your leagues pretty much regardless of size, even in relatively difficult matchups. I know the Jays offense hasn't been cooking on all gears just yet, but they're still a, you know, pretty difficult lineup. But that said, I'm trusting Stro. He's in the lineup and I try to get my 140 innings out of him and kind of go from there. Kikuchi, as I kind of hinted at earlier, I know he had the home run suppression last summer that really, really helped him turn a corner and be great down the stretch. I'm not fully sure I believe it yet, though. And in fairness, I was late to the party on Robbie Ray's homer suppression change. That one lasted longer, ends up getting him a Cy Young win. I don't know if we've seen that much change yet from Kikuchi that we can fully trust him with the home runs. And home runs are the quickest way to ruin an ERA. You know, you're pitching so well, boom, 3-run homer spoils the whole day. And that's kind of the Kikuchi experience sometimes. So I am a little bit nervous about his home runs. This Yankees team is hitting well. Their strength is power. And so I'm a little bit more cautious on him. In deeper formats, I think you got to roll with Kikuchi because you paid a relatively high pick for him, if we're talking like 15-team mixers. But in your shallower formats, I don't know that you have to run him out there just because the Yankees can get him for a couple homers. And if there's runners on base, all of a sudden you're looking at a 4-5-6 run outing.
So obviously in my position, you know, we gotta tell a story around the game. And we look at something like, hey, Yusei Kikuchi has thrown at Yankee Stadium 7 times and only allowed a 575 career OPS, even though that ballpark plays pretty friendly, only 2 home runs given up in there. When you're sitting down with the day-to-day ranks, how big does that sample need to be of pitcher in ballpark or pitcher versus particular hitters where that really starts to, you know, because I know on every broadcast we'll hear, oh, this guy's 2-for-3 against this pitcher, whatever. Yeah. I'd imagine for you that's way too small, but at what point does that start to, you know, resonate with you?
Yeah, obviously those ones are too small, but when you do start to put together, you know, upwards of a 10 start sample. And he's not quite there yet, but it is 33 and a third innings over seven outings for Kikuchi of success. And I think part of it is that while that ballpark does is friendly to homers, it's friendly to lefty homers. And as a lefty himself, Kikuchi's able to mitigate that a bit. And so he hasn't had as much trouble there. But I'm still going to use the overall sample of what Kikuchi does, which is allow homers kind of regardless of venue and still be a little bit more cautious with him. Like you said, there's a great story there. He's had a lot of success. Is it something that I would trust as fully bankable? No, not necessarily. Would I maybe leverage it to maybe give him a start in like a DFS situation and say, hey, let's see if he can kind of keep this going. I remember I used to start Paul Goldschmidt every time he would face Tim Lincecum in DFS. You know, obviously you start Paul Goldschmidt all the time, but in DFS you get to pick your lineup every day. So if he was facing Tim Lincecum, he had that guy's number, even for as good as Lincecum was. So there are certain things where I'll start to give it some credence, but statistically, in terms of like what the math guys will tell you, they'll say that that sample against the team has to be, you know, triple digit innings. And by then the team and the player have changed so much that it almost ends up invalidating it a different way. So mathematically, it almost never becomes relevant. But from the fact of like what we're looking at day to day and how you can be confident in your starts to make your best decisions, you know, there's a little credence to it. And that's why I'm not fully sitting Kikuchi, but I do still worry about his general home run issues and the fact that their biggest home run guys are right-handers, namely with Judge and Stanton. And so I got to be careful of a lefty going in there and maybe not keeping that success going.
And three lefties in the Yankees lineup today against Kikuchi, but one of those is Juan Soto, who we don't really worry about platoon stuff with. We'll see how he plays, this being obviously his Yankee Stadium debut as a Yankee. On the other side would be Marcus Stroman. I know certainly when you're a high ground ball pitcher, he has the fifth highest ground ball rate in all of baseball over the last 10 years. Obviously, I'm adding a innings pitched qualifier there, but he's up there with the Logan Webbs of the world in terms of keeping the ball on the ground. That is going to limit your risk for home runs at Yankee Stadium as a right-handed pitcher. That's a pretty smart thing to do. The other thing that stands out to me in Stroman's profile is last year he was a reverse splits guy. So righties actually hit better against him than lefties did. The year before that, he was normal, which means lefties would hit a little better against him than righties did. The year before that, he was split neutral. You know, I tend to not disbelieve this stuff, but the pitch mix has to make a lot of sense. It has to, you got to understand why, you know, a changeup artist is maybe going to be more split neutral because, you know, righty-righty changeups, nobody really wants to throw those. What do you make? Stroman can dabble with that, but he's mostly a fastball guy, mostly a sinker-cutter guy. What do you make of the fact that he had reverse splits last year but didn't really in the past?
I'm right there with you where I'm not going to put too much credence in it if things don't match up. And like you said, he is not somebody, Marcus Stroman, that has the platoon neutralizers, which would be a changeup or even a curveball. He does have a curveball, but like, and a changeup technically, but he doesn't leverage those terribly often. So I do think he's going to be more of a standard splits guy. And I'm still going to rely on him to be that and struggle more against the lefties than the righties, despite what we saw last year, because similar to what I was saying about the park splits, platoon splits, the math guys will tell you those do not neutralize or statistically become statistically viable for like a decade. And again, by then the player has changed so much that they're not even useful regardless of what you think of them. So I still am going to look at the composite of Stroman and see he's a guy who does better against righties than he does lefties, or if anything is a little bit equal, but I definitely don't believe in him that he's turned this new corner and all of a sudden gets lefties out better than righties. I would still like my lefties more, you know, your Dalton Varshos of the world if you're looking for like a DFS play. Maybe Kevin Biggio, now that he's in the lineup, could be a sneaky cheap play. I still go for some lefties against Marcus Stroman.
Looking ahead in this series a little bit, I know you haven't done your pitcher lists for Saturday and Sunday yet, but want to do a couple quick hitters here. The Jays are going to see Clark Schmidt and Luis Gil in the next two starts. Clark Schmidt had an iffy first outing, but the spring stuff, if we look at, you know, Eno Saris's stuff, plus metric, some of the pitch design stuff you guys have up on the Fangraphs leaderboards and player pages, Clark Schmidt really popped in spring training. Is that a guy that you are buying on as kind of, hey, he's taken a step forward with the quality of his work?
I am. I like Clark Schmidt. I like what he was able to do last year too. I put a lot of credence when a guy can make his first 30 plus turns through a rotation in a season as well. He had 32 starts last year, ups and downs in terms of the success, but that's a big deal to be able to last through the entire season. Still just 28, which isn't a baby or a prospect or anything, but still in the right side of 30 where we can project a little bit of upside with Clark Schmidt. So I do like him. That will be a tough challenge for the Jays tomorrow for sure.
Luis Gil getting the ball on Sunday. We don't have much major league sample with him. 8 starts scattered over 3 seasons here. Is it, you know, from a fantasy perspective, there's some strikeout juice there. But in terms of his potential to stick in a major league rotation, like, we can be honest, he's here because the Yankees have had some injury issues. Longer term, does he have a pathway to sticking in a rotation, or is this probably a good bullpen arm longer term?
I think he does have a path to doing so. He's one of my bigger breakout picks this year. Somebody who could really pop off, Luis Gil. That's G-I-L. It's not Gil. It's Gil. Had a huge spring and leveraged that and the opportunity to jump into the rotation. He's going to have to do well to stick, because as they get guys back, you know, if he's not pitching well, I think he'll get pushed. But I think he really does have a chance. And I'm not just doing this because of the first name comparison here, but the best of Luis Gil can be what the best of Luis Severino was. And I know we're several years removed from quality Luis Severino, but at his best, fastball slider with a decent changeup, I think we can see that from Luis Gil. He does have good swing and miss, needs to mitigate the walks. If he's giving up too many free passes, that's when he's going to get in trouble. But I'm really intrigued by him. I felt, you know, as a fantasy dweeb, I was pretty bummed that he only went 4 2/3 in Arizona because the win was right there for him if they give him one more out. But I am very intrigued by Luis Gil. So I think it's going to be a tough weekend. At least Gausman's going. Bowden Francis obviously trying to bounce back from his tough start. But at least they got the ace going on Saturday. So if they don't win tonight, they got to get the Gausman win, because I think Gil has a big advantage over Francis if you're just kind of looking one-to-one right now.
Yeah, and I'm a Bowden Francis guy. I want to see more of that new splitter that by the stuff metrics give him 4 league average or better pitches, but not a great first go for him last week. Gausman, I mean, you can't come back to your home opener on Monday at like 3-7. You got to get at least one out of this series, preferably 2, to come back 5-5. Want to quickly whip around Major League Baseball with you, just your take on 2 guys who are going today. Brady Singer throwing for Kansas City. He's got an easy landing spot with a matchup with the White Sox. He was electric in his first outing. That a guy that you think, I mean, I think he had 10 strikeouts in his first start. Maybe it's not that good every time out, but is Brady Singer someone we should be watching as a potential breakout guy?
Absolutely. Keep tabs on him. I like this KC team. They're an upstart ball club. I think we've seen flashes from Brady Singer before. Again, 27 years old, not a baby, but still somebody that you can project some growth from. And I think KC can take a step this year, particularly if somebody like Singer is giving them a second go-to guy behind Cole Reagans. I like the Waka and the Lugo signings as well. They might actually have some depth in their rotation. Singer is a linchpin there to give them that extra guy, though. So, yeah, I love him against the White Sox. I love me and you against the White Sox, let's just be honest.
Yeah, and the other end of that is, so Brady Singer gets this nice second spot against the White Sox, and then there's Jared Jones for the Pirates, who, like, was, again, electric, struck a lot of guys out, missed a lot of bats, didn't have the best overall line, and he's going to get real tested against the Orioles today. Jared Jones may be here a little earlier than a lot of us anticipated. Yeah. Are you kind of hold and watch to see how this plays out, or is the strikeout potential just too big with Jared Jones?
I kind of open up my window early on thinking that even if I take a few hits, I can kind of make up for it over the course of the 6-month grind. So I'm going to give Jared Jones a start here at Baltimore. I know it's tough. I respect that Baltimore lineup big time. Heck, their AAA team is better than the White Sox and the A's rosters right now. But I'm going to go ahead and go with Jared Jones. Very electric rookie. One of 2 this year that could make the Pirates kind of the upstart of the NL. I was talking about KC. The Pirates are kind of the NL version there, where they've got some things cooking, and Jared Jones could be a big part of that. I'm going to go for him against Baltimore. I know it's a risk, but I'm open to that risk.
All right. Paul Spohr, thanks so much for taking the time out, man. Great to catch up with you and keep up all the great work. Indispensable stuff at Fangraphs with the Daily Pitcher List, the Sleeper in the Bus podcast. And yeah, deeply appreciate the out of the park baseball work.
Thanks so much, Blake. Great catching up with you. I'll talk to you later.
Paul Spohr, you can follow him on Twitter and Twitch at Spohr, S-P-O-R-E-R. We've got about 10 minutes left before we take you to the Blue Jays game. Again, it's 1 o'clock start Friday afternoon. What could possibly be better? The Jays have an afternoon home game next week too. And I believe the week after. I love afternoon weekday baseball. Now I understand that I have a certain type of job that allows me to enjoy afternoon weekday baseball in a way that some people maybe can't, but it's great for me. It feels cool to have a Yankees day game for their home opener. It's going to be Kikuchi against Stroman. Again, 1 o'clock, we'll kick it over to Ben Shulman and Chris LaRue, who have the call for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Blair and Barker will be with you after the game on both radio and on TV. They'll be taking your calls on the back leg line. So make sure you check out the phone number for that if you want to call into Blair and Barker. Fan pregame will follow that. Blue Jay Central is also on for you, 12:30 to 1. With Jamie and Joe. Ran into Joe a little earlier. Always nice to see the Blue Jays Central guys, and I'll be back on with them tomorrow. Today, though, we have a couple of injury updates for you and some roster updates before we get into the lineups. I mentioned during the chat with Paul that Kevin Kiermaier got scratched from today's lineup. He's dealing with lower back tightness. That'll put Kevin Biggio in the lineup and move Davis Schneider from second to left. We'll go over the entire lineups and matchups in a moment. Another big move the Blue Jays made, Wes Parsons was designated for assignment today. He had kind of gotten in a couple make work appearances where they just needed him to eat some innings. He was a guy that I was a little surprised in the offseason stayed on the 40 man, as there was some 40 man churn. No disrespect to him. I understand why the team likes him. Some of the pitch design metrics like the progress he made in spring training, but he was here as a length arm to give them some, give them a guy who could mop up if needed over these first couple series. He threw five innings, gave up six runs, and he now makes room for Paolo Espino, who, if you don't know the story, make sure you check out the piece Arden Zwelling wrote on him in spring training. Really, really cool story, a 37-year-old who really spins the ball. I don't know how much we're going to see him pitch. Certainly, I don't know how much we're going to see him pitch in leverage. He's a guy who can give them some length and was going to be starting at AAA. But man, the spin rate on that stuff, nobody gets the ball to break quite like Paolo Espino. It's more about can you locate it? Can guys, can you get enough swing and miss with it? Can you set it up? Can your fastball set it up? But that guy can really throw a breaker. Arden did a really cool piece on his path back to this point. Make sure you check that out. So Espino in, Parsons out. If you're looking at the bullpen, updates on those guys, Jordan Romano threw, and this is per John Schneider via Shai Davidi, provided us a couple updates earlier. Jordan Romano threw a second bullpen session. Next up for him would be to throw live batting practice. Eric Swanson threw live batting practice. Danny Jansen caught both of those, which is encouraging. The potential plan now for Danny Jansen would be ideally he catches Alec Manoah's rehab start at Dunedin on Sunday. They're hoping Alec Manoah can go four innings or about 65 pitches at Low A Dunedin on Sunday. Jansen, to be able to do that, though, you got to be able to hit as well, as Ben Shulman reminded me a little earlier. So we have heard Jansen playing catch. We've heard Jansen catching these bullpen and live BPs for the rehabbing relievers. But whether Jansen's up to a spot with that that fractured hand to face live pitching, we'll see. We'll see by Sunday. Joey Votto, by the way, is getting better, still just doing defensive work. On the Yankees side of things, they placed Jonathan Loaisiga on the 60-day IL today, right to the 60-day, which is not a great sign. He has a right flexor strain. Dennis Santana got signed to a major league deal with them and called up another guy who, not dissimilar from Espino, has bounced around a lot, kind of a journeyman trying to make it back to the major league. So I guess a cool story on the Yankees side as well. Don't know that we'll see Santana or Espino unless this game gets out of hand for either side. Let's take a look at the lineups. The big question for me on the Yankees side was twofold. One was how many of their lefties would they play? They have five left-handed hitters. Yusei Kikuchi, obviously a lefty who has really strong performance against left-handed hitters. The Yankees are not going to sit some of their lefties. Juan Soto is going to be in there every day. He's able to stand up and hold a bat. Anthony Rizzo, Alex Verdugo, as close to everyday players that you're going to get as well. So all three of those guys are in. Trent Grisham doesn't really play all that much anyway, so he's on the bench. And then the one real decision for them was at the catcher position, where Austin Wells has taken more of the starts, but he's a lefty, so he will make way today for Jose Trevino, who, by the way, if you're looking at the Jays, you know, if they get runners on base, Jose Trevino is about neutral controlling the run game based on the Statcast metrics we have available to us. Hey, neutral's not bad. It's better than what the Jays have been able to do from a catching perspective. Trevino's a very, very good framer and blocker. You've probably heard this story before with a catcher like Alejandro Kirk. Great framing metrics, great blocking metrics. Although in Kirk's case, lagging behind with controlling the run game, Trevino's at least average there. Not really going to help on the offensive side as much as Austin Wells maybe would. But this is a Yankees team that can, you can handle one soft spot in the lineup given the quality of the rest of the lineup. That lineup will see Gleyber Torres lead off and play second, Juan Soto in right field, Aaron Judge in center, Giancarlo Stanton at DH, Anthony Rizzo at first base, Anthony Volpe at shortstop. He's off to a very, very nice start to this season. Alex Verdugo in left, John Birdie making just his second start of the season because Cabrera's been so hot. Birdie gets the start here, and then Trevino rounds it out. It'll be Marcus Stroman on the hill against Yusei Kikuchi. If you're looking at Kikuchi's history against these guys, I mentioned earlier, he has a 575 career OPS at Yankee Stadium in seven games, has only given up two home runs, and has a 189 ERA there. He also hasn't faced a left-handed hitter yet this year, so that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Matchup to matchup, Aaron Judge is 4-for-20 against Kikuchi in his career with nine strikeouts. He has got two home runs off of him, though, so very boomer bust there in the Judge Kikuchi matchup. Gleyber Torres, who will lead off, is 9-for-22. That's a 409 average. He has a 638 slugging against Kikuchi as well. Verdugo's had some success, 5-for-13 in that lefty-lefty matchup. If you're looking for spots where Kikuchi may succeed, Giancarlo Stanton, 1-for-14 with six strikeouts. Rizzo's 1-for-10 as well. Juan Soto has never faced him. I'm really looking forward to that matchup. On the Blue Jays side, here's who the Jays will roll out there. George Springer leads off in right field. Vlad Guerrero Jr. at first. Bo Bichette at shortstop. Justin Turner at DH. Davis Schneider hitting fifth. He was originally penciled in for second base. He'll now move to left field. Kevin Biggio into the game, hitting sixth, playing at second base. That's because Kevin Kiermaier was removed a late scratch with back stiffness. Alejandro Kirk catches and hits seventh. Dalton Varsho hitting eighth in center field. And Isaiah Kiner-Falefa playing third base, hitting ninth. If you're looking at the Stroman matchup side, I mentioned earlier, he threw about 75% cutters and sinkers in his first appearance. He's obviously a fastball heavy guy, leans on that sinker a lot. One of the very best ground ball artists in this generation of major league starting pitchers. Since 2014, the only qualified starters with a higher ground ball rate, Framber Valdez, Dallas Keuchel, Logan Webb, Brett Anderson. That's pretty good worm burning company to be in. The Jays have struggled primarily early this year. I mean, they've struggled overall, but that struggle has come primarily with off-speed stuff, less so with the fastball. They haven't seen a ton of Marcus Stroman. Stroman's only started against the Blue Jays once in his career. It was in the summer of 2022. Five innings, one run, only one strikeout. Hit Danny Jansen with a pitch, because who doesn't hit Danny Jansen with a pitch? Kevin Kiermaier had faced Marcus Stroman more than any of these Blue Jays, 37 appearances against him, five extra base hits and a 543 slugging. So that would have potentially been a good matchup for the Blue Jays. Kiermaier scratched here. George Springer, Justin Turner, Dalton Varsho, Vlad Guerrero, Bo Bichette, they all have good results in small samples against Marcus Stroman. Nothing you get too excited about, but also nothing you're too worried about. IKF has bad results in a small sample. The most interesting one to me, though, is Davis Schneider has really good numbers, or had really good numbers last year, rather, against right-handed sinkers and against right-handed cutters. So we know that what Schneider has struggled with is the high velocity up in the zone. But you look at even righty on righty, guys who keep their fastballs lower in the zone, and then especially a guy who's throwing at 91, 92 like Marcus Stroman is, feels like a potential Davis Schneider day. So that's good. We will, and I mentioned IKF has had some struggles in a small sample against Marcus Stroman. He generally does well with this pitch type too, which makes sense. IKF's a bat-to-ball guy. These are non-elite velocity fastballs that tend to be located around the edges of the zone. You're maybe not going to be able to do damage against them, but a bat-to-ball guy like IKF may be better able to handle that matchup. Really excited for this one. Really excited for this series. We'll see Kevin Gausman against Clark Schmidt tomorrow. Luis Gil against Bowden Francis on Sunday. So this will be a really, really fun one. It's Stroman Kikuchi today. First pitch, 108. It's going to be Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue on the call for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Dan, Buck, and Hazel on the TV side. Whether you're watching on TV or listening on radio, Blair and Barker will be with you post-game for Jays Talk. So get your texts and your calls to the back line ready to go. Hopefully there are more positive calls and texts this time, because the Blue Jays get more than one hit in a game for just the second time this week. This has been a fun double dip show, Raptor show and Jays show. Back Monday with Raptor show. Hope you guys have a terrific weekend. Hope the Toronto Blue Jays get more than one hit in this game down at Yankee Stadium. Have a good one, Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue. Have you for Jays Yankees next.